I was talking with a group of people about survey fatigue when two competing explanations emerged. One view was that people are tired of surveys because we keep giving them the same blunt instrument. If organizations offered more ways to participate, conversations, workshops, SMS, voice, deliberation, digital diaries, people would be more willing to engage. My instinct was different. I wondered whether people were less tired of surveys than they were tired of the silence that followed them. You receive an invitation. You give an organization some of your time, sometimes a few minutes, sometimes much longer. You recall an experience, offer an idea, or explain why a decision matters to you. You press submit. Then, nothing. No acknowledgement beyond an automated receipt. No explanation of what was heard. No indication of what changed. No account of what could not change or why. Months later, another survey arrives from the same organization and asks for another withdrawal from the same depleted account of goodwill. I thought the missing feedback loop might be the real source of survey fatigue. When I asked the academic literature to referee the argument, my hypothesis did not win cleanly. The answer was more useful than that. The research changed the question. The strongest evidence I found was about burden. Long questionnaires require more effort. Repeated requests can suppress participation in later surveys. Confusing questions, irrelevant topics, poor timing, and bad previous experiences all increase the cost of responding. Researchers Ting Yan and Douglas Williams describe response burden not as one moment, but as a continuous evaluation made by the respondent, before beginning, while answering, and when deciding whether to participate again. That last part matters. Every engagement inherits the memory of the engagements before it. Research involving university students found that administering multiple surveys within one academic year could significantly suppress response rates in later surveys. In a very different setting, researchers randomized the order of questions in 2 to 3 hour living standard surveys and found that an additional hour increased the probability of a respondent skipping a question by 10 to 64%. A survey that runs for hours is not the same thing as a short council consultation. Neither study gives us a universal rule. They do, however, reinforce a practical lesson. Ask less. Ask clearly, and do not ask simply because a survey is easy to send. Changing the channel can help when it reduces burden, improves access, or better suits the question. A conversation may be more appropriate than a form. A deliberative process may be more appropriate than a poll. SMS may reach someone who will never create an account on a consultation portal. A different channel can still produce the same silence. A voice note can disappear into a report nobody sees. A workshop can collect richer contributions without giving participants any clearer idea of what happened next. Meanwhile, a short, purposeful survey can be a respectful and useful way to participate. The research changed my mind about the narrow question. Burden and overexposure are the better supported explanations for survey fatigue. But it made the broader problem harder to ignore. Organizations keep improving the ways they ask for input while treating the work of explaining what happened to that input as an afterthought. People don't need to get their preferred outcome every time. Democracy couldn't function if participation meant personal veto. They do, however, deserve to understand the relationship between their contribution and the eventual decision. The OECD guidelines for citizen participation processes make using citizen input and providing feedback an explicit step. They recommend explaining which inputs were used, which were not, why, and how the contribution fits into the larger decision. More recent Scottish government research into public participation in policymaking similarly found that interviewees saw robust, honest feedback loops is an important part of meaningful exchange between institutions and citizens.
That is not proof that a follow-up email creates trust.
Closing the loop won't rescue an exhausting, irrelevant, or badly designed survey. It won't compensate for asking the same people the same questions every month. Feedback can, however, help determine whether people believe their time was worth giving and whether they will consider giving it again. A credible process needs both less unnecessary burden and a much clearer account of what happens next. Submission is not the finish line. Much of the participation technology I have encountered is organized around collection. Create a project, build a form, publish it, promote it, watch the response count, export the results, close the project. From the participant's perspective, the process ends at exactly the point where the difficult work begins. The organization still has to bring different channels together, understand conflicting experiences, preserve minority views, advise decision makers, make trade-offs, record the decision, and explain the result. That work often crosses teams, systems, and timelines. The people collecting feedback may not control the final decision. Contact permissions may limit individual follow-up. Months can pass before there is an outcome worth returning. I don't think this usually breaks because engagement practitioners do not care. The problem is that follow-up is too often expected to bridge every organizational gap manually. Contact details sit in one system, workshop notes in another, survey exports in a spreadsheet, and the final decision in a briefing document. By the time someone asks how participants should be updated, the connection between contribution, evidence, and outcome has been broken. I think we need to design participation around the whole loop. Make a clear promise. Explain what decision is being made, what is genuinely open to influence, what is fixed, and how contributions will be used. Choose the right ways to participate. Use surveys, interviews, workshops, SMS, voice, deliberation, and in-person activities because they suit the people and the question. Bring the evidence together. Preserve contributions across channels without flattening disagreement or losing the original words behind a conclusion. Show the reasoning. Connect themes, recommendations, and trade-offs to the evidence that informed them. Return the outcome. Tell people what was heard, what changed, what did not change, and why. Carry the relationship forward. Let the next engagement begin with the memory of the last one, including commitments still outstanding. A final report does not close the loop by itself. Participants should be able to understand how their contribution moved through the decision. Sometimes that will mean an individual update. Sometimes a public explanation is more appropriate. The format matters less than completing the connection. What building community changed for me? This was the broader thesis behind community conversations. At the beginning of Community Labs, we cold called and emailed around 100 practitioners. Across those conversations, we identified roughly 13 recurring challenges. The thread connecting almost everyone was that they had too much data and not enough time, resources, or specialized skills to bring it together meaningfully. These were people. They cared about advocating for communities, building relationships, and helping organizations make better decisions. But the better they engaged, the more work they created for themselves across workshops, surveys, handwritten notes, spreadsheets, submissions, recordings, interviews, and reports. We began by helping teams bring that fragmented evidence together. The work eventually led us to a broader question. What would community engagement look like if technology supported the entire process rather than only the survey or the analysis at the end? We sometimes describe the answer as an engagement operating system. In plain English, it meant connecting planning, participation, review, analysis, decision-making, and follow-up in one workflow. Community Labs was wound down before we had enough time to realize that whole vision. But the first conversations pilots strengthened my belief that the underlying problem was real. Artificial intelligence can reduce some of the effort inside that workflow. It can transcribe a conversation, translate a contribution, identify related evidence, help a practitioner compare recurring themes, and draft an update. It shouldn't decide what the community really meant, invent consensus, or quietly become the authority responsible for a public decision. The part I wouldn't compromise is traceability. If a system says a concern was widespread, a practitioner should be able to inspect the contributions behind that statement. If a final update says feedback changed the plan, the organization should be able to point to the decision and the evidence. Technology should reduce the cost of showing the work, not remove the obligation to do it. Feedback is not agreement. A practical objection remains. What happens when the most popular suggestion cannot be implemented? What if two groups want incompatible outcomes? What if the final decision is constrained by legislation, budget, safety, evidence, or an election commitment? A feedback loop does not promise that every proposal will be adopted. It does not turn participation into a vote or require an organization to manufacture agreement where none exists. "We heard you" is not enough either. It is often the phrase used when an organization wants the appearance of listening without the accountability of explaining. A useful return should say what the organization asked and who took part, where people agreed and disagreed, what evidence influenced the decision, what changed, what did not, and why. It should also be honest about what remains undecided and when another update can reasonably be expected. In an experiment embedded in a local government survey, public participation increased perceptions of procedural fairness, which were in turn connected to broader assessments of government. That does not mean a good process makes every outcome acceptable. It does reinforce the importance of showing that contributions were considered fairly, especially when the answer is no. An honest "no because" may be more respectful than an enthusiastic "thank you for your valuable feedback," followed by silence. Measure what happens after submit. Response counts are easy to display. They are also an incomplete measure of democratic participation. I would rather know whether people understood what was genuinely open to influence, whether they received an honest update, whether major conclusions could be traced to their supporting evidence, which groups were missing, and whether participants believed taking part was worth their time. None of those measures proves that a process was democratically healthy. They are signals that extend beyond the convenient moment of submission, which is precisely why they matter. A consultation can collect thousands of responses and still be unhealthy. A smaller process may be more credible if participants understood the question, saw the trade-offs, and received an honest account of the decision. The next survey starts before it is sent. Every request for public input spends a little institutional trust. A well-designed process can earn some back. It can show that participation is not a ceremonial step between a draft decision and a final announcement. It can help people understand the limits of influence without pretending those limits do not exist. It can make disagreement legible and public reasoning stronger. A disconnected process does the opposite. It collects, extracts, and disappears. So yes, reduce the burden. Coordinate the requests. Ask fewer and better questions. Offer different methods when they genuinely improve access or the quality of participation. A new tool will not repair a broken relationship by itself. Democracy does not need another disconnected survey. It needs institutions prepared to complete the sentence they begin every time they say, "We want to hear from you."